Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's going on?
My final day here at the station.
It is a nice, well-earned vacation for you. I'm excited for you. I am excited for you.
Burnsy.
What?
Your final day at the station?
I didn't let me finish. And he said it. Did that sound like a retirement announcement or something? Like
my final day.
This is it for me. I'm done after today. My final show.
We've just come a long way from Gambo saying the ever vacationing Dave Burns to him now actually like congratulating you for going on vacation.
Well, I'm excited about his vacation.
I think he's actually more excited about this vacation than I am. Okay, you want to tell everybody why?
Okay. Normally, you're...
Gambo, please tell us about Burns' vacation.
Tell me about my vacation. Tell everybody why you're so excited about my vacation.
Normally, he goes to that ho-humps California every year. Boring.
Don't you vacation in California?
I don't like California.
Why do you go there for a three or four day weekend?
I really don't. I mean, I really don't.
Please. I've heard you talk about going to San Diego.
I mean, we go a little bit, but I'm not like, I don't want to go spend a week in San Diego. I don't like California.
Okay, carry on. You're distracting him from the point here.
Yeah. Well,
so the point is that Burnsy, he's actually picked a little bit of a Gambo vacation. He's going to Montana, and he's staying in this, what do you even call those things you're staying in?
They're called yurts.
Yurts.
A yurt.
A yurt. You know, like when I was in Finland, we stayed in this like glass igloo, and you're going to Montana. This is completely different than what you normally do.
Yeah.
And you're going to go stay in this yurt that overlooks like the sky and the stars, it's got a clear sky dome.
It's got a telescope in the room so you can get stars while you're in the
room. This is a me vacation.
Yeah. We've always joked that Gambo's going to write an autobiography, maybe a travel guide titled Gambo's Vacations, Gambo Style Vacations.
You can say whatever you want about me. I know how to vacation. I know how to vacation. I do.
I just want to say I'm so impressed that you've managed to turn Burnsy's vacation into something about yourself.
It's quite the feat.
That's actually incredible. You started
You called it a Gambo vacation.
Technically, I started it because I'm the one who said he's more excited about it than I am.
I'm so excited for his vacation. I can't wait for him to send me photos and video of what that place looks like. But like, that's a great vacation.
What's funny about it is we're not staying in the yurt the entire time we're there. We're only there two of the nights. We're in Montana, but we're in Montana for a whole week, and we're going to be in Whitefish. We're going to hike Glacier, and we're going to kayak, and we're going to probably see grizzly bears, and hopefully we don't get attacked by any of them.
You are living.
So today is my final day before vacation. I will be back at some point. I know many of you would be disappointed to hear that I'll be back at some point, but I will be back.
Most people like
you at some point.
Yeah, most people do like me, I think. Yeah. So with that in mind, let's weigh in on what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
Fully expected, but the Pac-12 has said, nope, we're good.
Nope.
Don't need to expand.
No,
we're fine just the way we are.
You know, we were led to believe that the other day. I had made some phone calls and to people that are in on the decision-making process and in on these meetings. And, you know, we discussed it. It's very unlikely that they were going to expand. It didn't make sense to add BYU. It didn't make sense to add Boise. They weren't going to add, you know, Fresno or UNLV and Nevada, any of the schools out west. They might have taken a look out east where Oklahoma and Texas was, but it was unlikely that they were going to add anybody because it's the chancellors and the presidents that were going to make the decision, not an athletic director and not the Pac-12 commissioner. And they were going to study on academics was going to be the first and foremost priority. They looked at everything and they said, you know what, there's nothing out there that is going to make us a stronger conference. They've already got some areas like Pullman and Corvallis, TV-wise, that don't do that great.
Right.
So they weren't interested in adding another market that didn't bring a large TV audience to it. Now, the academics was another part of it as well, because the academics was going to, you know, be very important. They weren't going to look at anybody that didn't have great academic credentials.
Yeah, this was John Wilner when he was on with us yesterday, our favorite Pac-12 insider. And this time I'm not being duplicitous when I say that he is our favorite Pac-12 insider from the San Jose Mercury News. there was no school, none, that could bring in added revenue for the conference.
The purpose of expanding from an economic standpoint is to increase the value for the current members, right?
Right.
So let's just take ASU and Arizona for a second. Right now, they're making about $24 million a year just in Pac-12 football and basketball regular season contracts. They're going to, in a couple of years, they're going to renegotiate those contracts, whether they expand or not. And that $24 million is going to turn into $35 or $40 million per year per school. So if you're going to add a team, Oklahoma State, Boise State, San Diego State, whoever, that team's got to come in and turn that $40 million for Arizona and ASU into at least $41 million, right? You can't bring a school in that is going to undermine
right.
the size of each piece of the revenue pie for the existing members. And when you're talking about that kind of money, there's nobody out there.
Speaking of our guy Wilner, he wrote a story today in the San Jose Mercury News. We had him on yesterday. He wrote the story this morning, in which he basically said a lot of what he said on our air yesterday, he wrote in the story. He said there is one school that's available, loose sense of the term, one school that's available that the Pac-12 could add, and I just don't see where another school is.
Houston.
The University of Houston.
You get the big market.
Eighth largest TV market in America.
Good football program.
Facilities that are on par in terms of the money spent on those facilities. Academically, they would belong with the Pac-12. You were talking about kind of the academic element
which
of all of this.
Which was a big one.
He said they're really the... He goes, I wouldn't go to the Big 12. None of those really fit. Certainly not Boise. Certainly not San Diego State. Certainly not BYU. We've talked a lot about that. He said Houston is the only one I can find that fits. And I'm telling you right now, and this is my words from his words, I can't find a 14th team. I can't find another school... TCU, no. Kansas, not really. The 14th school he could find was the University of Central Florida. And he said the problem with that is they're 1,000 miles too far away.
You can't have Florida in the Pac-12.
You can't.
You know how far that is.
I know, and he said that. He said that they're impossible. You have to rule them out. But those are the only two schools he thinks you could possibly expand to if you wanted to.
I mean, can you imagine like if Arizona State joined a conference with the majority of teams in Florida?
No.
I mean, that's just the time differences. The tribe is a three-hour time difference.
I say that, and then I think it's crazy that West Virginia is in the Big 12. I think it's crazy that Rutgers in New Jersey is in the Big 10. Now, is that as crazy as literal coast to coast, right? I mean, it's not as crazy.
Because Michigan's in the Big 10, Ohio State, and Penn State. It's in Pennsylvania. I mean, like New York and Pennsylvania and New Jersey, they're very close.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a couple hours. Only a couple hours. Penn State's there. So at least there are some geographically easier
places
to get to.
There's some schools within the conference that you can go, that's kind of close.
That's a quick trip. So I just, you know, listen, I didn't think they were going to expand. I was led to believe they weren't going to expand. We talked about it. We discussed it. Now, what this means for the Big 12, if I'm that Bob Bowlesby,
yep.
If I'm him, I'm breathing a sigh of relief right now. Okay, we're intact. If I'm Texas and Oklahoma, I'm pissed. Because you know what? If somebody would have taken a Big 12 school, now it doesn't mean that still can't happen, but if somebody would have taken a Big 12 school, the Big 12 would have dissolved, Texas and Oklahoma would have been free, and they would have been out of that contract, and they could have probably went next year. But for now, the Big 12 exists. They could look to add, and if I'm them, I look to expand. Who wants to come into the Big 12 and see if you could somehow salvage that conference?
Yeah, in your email to me today, you also included some interesting comments from the commissioner of the AAC.
Yes.
Mike Oresko, in which he's trying to figure out how to get his conference to be part of like a Power Six. And I'm the most obvious solution, I would think, would be some sort of a merger between the Big 12 and the AAC. I mean, I don't know if that would satisfy everybody's... I mean, the AAC has some decent programs in there, and I believe...
Cincinnati's been very, very good in football.
Yeah.
Cincinnati, Houston.
Tulsa,
East Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've got... Yeah, there's some good... And, you know, Central Florida. So there's some... That's a good conference. I mean, that is a solid conference. Like, their programs are good. I mean, they've had programs that have played in New Year's Bowl games. So that's a decent now. But if I'm them, why do I want to go? I'll take a Big 12 team over with us, but I'm not going to. We're not. Why would I leave that conference, go to the Big 12 with no Texas and no Oklahoma?
Exactly.
There's no reason to.
You come to us. We're not coming to you.
We're not coming to you. What's the, Hey, Cincinnati, you want to come to us? No, why? You don't have Texas and Oklahoma. You're not going to have, your TV money's going to go down, not up. Like, why am I leaving?
Yeah, the commissioner of the AAC and that conference becomes now the most interesting piece on the board.
I agree.
Because you got to try to figure out where they go. And they, because they very much want to make sure they're included. Whenever this becomes, whenever the powers in college football separate themselves from the rest of the NCAA, and it's probably inevitable, the teams in the AAC are going to want to make sure they're in. You know, they're going to want to make sure they're part of that. And they weren't invited to the Alliance. They're probably disappointed about that, but they want to make sure that their member schools are going to have a chance to compete for championships and whatnot, just like all the others are. So they become the most interesting piece on the board, I think, now.
Look at the last 3 years of Cincinnati football. 11-2, 11-3, 9-1. Peach Bowl, Birmingham Bowl, Military Bowl. I mean, they've got a long list of, you know, going to bowl. 2009, they were in the Sugar Bowl against Florida. They've had success. They were in an Orange Bowl. Like, Cincinnati football has been good. It's been good. So they've had a lot of success there. It's a decent. I don't think the AAC is going to have any of their schools leave. Like, I don't know, but I would be surprised if any of those schools left.
Yeah, when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, Cliff Kingsbury made it official today. Kyler Murray will not play in the Cardinals' final preseason game. What's your confidence level now for this Arizona offense heading into the regular season? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. What? Cliff Kingsbury said Kyler Murray isn't playing on Saturday? Man, shocked.
Nice.
Right now, if Kyler's going to play or not?
Yes. He will not play.
Is there a reason behind that?
Yes.
What is it?
I won't tell you. No, he's ready to go. Yeah, he's ready to go. He's a very good quarterback. He made the Pro Bowl last year, and I feel very confident in his abilities this year.
The back and forth today with Cliff Kingsbury.
I'm not going to tell you.
Do you know whether he's going to play? Yes. Is he going to play? No.
And tell me why he's not going to play? No.
No.
All right, I'll tell you.
All right, fine.
I can't figure it out yourself.
Have I not been clear enough on this topic?
He's a veteran quarterback now. It's his third year in the league. He's good to go. He's right. Doesn't need to work.
So we knew it was coming based off of kind of the tone from which Cliff Kingsbury answered the question a couple of days ago about whether Kyler needs any more preseason action. No. No, he doesn't need any more preseason action.
He doesn't need any more preseason action, and that's the case. I mean, there are a lot of these quarterbacks. This third preseason game, I think it's going to be very much like the fourth preseason game from last year. That's what I'm looking at right now. I'm seeing that there are other quarterbacks that aren't going to play. So, I mean, Brian Flores said Tua Tagovailoa, he's not going to play versus the Bengals, and you'll just see the list continue to grow. I don't think many of these quarterbacks are going to play. I think that they are going to treat this third preseason game very much like coaches treated the fourth preseason game when they had a fourth preseason game, and that's it. I just don't want to get anybody hurt. I've gone through a month of camp. My quarterback's healthy. He could get up out of bed. He could walk. He could throw the football. I don't want anything taking a chance that he's going to get hurt. I think that's how they view it right now.
Yeah, and not just with Kyler, but with most of the starters. Cliff kind of suggested today, to your point, it would be exactly the same deal on Saturday.
Tomorrow morning we'll finalize, but we'll err on the side of being conservative.
Yeah, and that means you're going to see, and you're 100% right. And we had speculated. Even as early as like a month ago, we had wondered how our coach is going to treat preseason games 1, 2, and 3 now that there's not a fourth. The fourth was always the biggest waste of time. The fourth was always the one where nobody ever played. Would the 3 become the new 4? And yes, the 3 is the new 4. The preseason game number 3 is the one where, I mean, the Cardinals are doing it, and I would imagine, to your point, a lot of teams are going to do it. And you know what? If anyone's been listening to this show for the past week, I think you will know that Gambo and I are very much fine with Kyler Murray not playing on Saturday.
No issues
whatsoever. There's no risk versus reward. There is zero reward. There is so little to next to nothing to get out of him playing on Saturday. And the risk is, I mean, anytime you play football, it's a risk. So
I'll be surprised
bother?
If I have three angles coming out of this preseason game that I actually really want to talk about on Monday. I'll be surprised.
I can give you two right now.
Andy Isabella.
That's one.
The running backs.
That's two.
And I mean, really, we're talking about the third and fourth running back and the sixth receiver. Come on. That's it. Sixth wide receiver, and who's going to be the third?
But you know
who's going to dress on game days as the backup running as the backup to their backup for running back?
Honestly, that's no different than it typically is for preseason game number four. I mean, usually preseason game number four is on a Thursday night, and it's against the Denver Broncos for the Cardinals. Right? It's been like that for 10 years. Thursday night, Denver Broncos preseason game number four. The next day, we come in here, and we're not talking about the game. We're not talking about what happened in the game. We're lucky if we barely watched the game. We're talking about the roster. And at that point, the conversation shifts away from what happened in the game to what's going to happen with the roster. Because the unique thing about this year is that those roster decisions will be due the Tuesday of next week. Okay, and there's already, and we'll talk about this a little later in the show, but there's already some speculation around the NFL that because there's more time between the preseason finale and the start of the regular season, you will see more trades. You will see more activity around the league. Rather than cutting a guy just to cut him, you might give yourself an opportunity to see if you could trade a guy because you've got more time before the regular season opener to kind of work some of those deals. So that's, I think when you're in here on Monday and I'm in Montana staying at the yurt, what you're going to be talking about isn't the game. You're going to be talking about the roster and who's going to make it and who's not.
Andy Isabella has made this team. He has made this team. He is going to be what he's done in the last 4 days, playing as well as he has. He's played really, really well. This is the best. They feel this is the best that he's looked. Andy Isabella will make the Cardinals roster. He will make the Cardinals roster. He's not getting cut. He's made the roster. I think that you've got to look at A.J. Green's got a one-year deal. Christian Kirk's got a one-year deal. There is not going to be a trade. I'm going to tell you this, that Andy Isabella makes the roster. Andy Isabella does not get traded.
Okay.
I'm going to say that right now, before they even play this next game. Isabella makes the team. Isabella doesn't get traded. He will be on the Cardinals roster. I'll give you one more nugget. Josh Jones is going to be the starting right guard for the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh.
I expect that Josh Jones is going to be the starting right guard for the Arizona Cardinals. He has played and practiced phenomenal. He has been really, really good. So just a great camp for Josh Jones. I think that Josh Jones will be the opening day starter at right guard for the Cardinals.
Over Brian Winters,
yes.
Over Justin Murray.
Yes.
That was the three-headed monster that was competing at right guard. You expect Josh Jones, the former third-round pick out of Houston,
to beat those other guys out.
To beat those other guys out when it's all said and done.
So Isabella makes the team. It doesn't matter what happens in his preseason game. He's made the roster. He's not going to get traded. Josh Jones will start at right guard for the Cardinals in week one.
Good stuff. More Cliff Kingsbury from today. Robert Alford. Officially in COVID protocols.
He's in the protocol.
Is it a 10-day or a 5-day?
He was vaccinated, so hoping it'll be a 5-day. Still has to test out of it.
Yeah, I think he has to have two negative tests over the span of like 24 hours, or maybe it's 48 hours. I can't remember exactly the policy. I'd have to look it up to be sure. But being vaccinated, the path for him back is much faster than it is for players who are not. So he is in the COVID protocol. Speaking of COVID protocols, Cliff is hoping that Justin Pugh and Jordan Phillips will both be back on Monday as well.
We hope so. Yeah, we're hoping Monday for Jordan Phillips and Justin Pugh.
And like every team in the NFL is dealing with this, how much did injuries, how much did COVID impact camp? Because today is technically the last day of training camp for the Cardinals. Cliff joked about being able to sleep in his own bed tonight. How much did the injuries in COVID impact camp this year?
Not too much. You know, the injuries we had were guys who've played a lot, and we know what they're about and know what they can do. So even though some guys missed time, we understand what they can accomplish. And the COVID situation just is what it is. Tough for those guys trying to make the team, but you know, we just push through.
I would say the one guy probably impacted the most was Andy Isabella, but based off of what you just said a second ago, it doesn't sound like it really did impact Andy
Isabella.
Come out.
You've had practices Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday with Andy Isabella, and he practiced very, very well. He looked really good. And again, factor in A.J. Green's got 1 year. on his deal. Christian Kirk's got 1 year on his deal. They're not going to let Andy Isabella go. They're not going to trade him for a fifth-round pick. They're not going to cut him. I think it's safe to say, and we'll see when the final cuts come down, but I'd bet a house payment on it. Andy Isabella is on this team.
Wow. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, ever since the day he was drafted, Zaven Gollins took Jordan Hicks' spot basically on the Cardinals' depth chart. How is the relationship now between the first-round rookie and the savvy vet? We'll talk about that. You'll hear from Zaven Gollins next on the Burns and Gambo show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll presented by Sanderson Ford.
That's funny that, Sarah, you just mentioned the Baltimore Orioles. They sent out, so they've already won today. This morning they sent out a really funny tweet. The Baltimore Orioles are tied for the most wins in baseball since August 25th.
That's good.
That's pretty good, right? The Orioles themselves tweeted because they ended a 19-game losing streak.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
They
19.
Ended? Yeah,
yeah, they beat Shohei Ohtani.
So this morning, the Baltimore Orioles are tied for the most wins in baseball since August 25th.
Oh, okay.
That's good. That's
claps for whoever tweeted that.
Bravo
that's great.
To the Orioles social media team, because that's pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Sarah's here. She got our Twitter poll question of the day. Pac-12 announcing today they will not, for now, pursue expansion. They gave themselves a little bit of wiggle room there.
Indeed, they did.
But for now, they're not going to. And what's our question based off of this?
Yeah, we're asking, I mean, you guys have already discussed it, but we're asking, do you agree with the Pac-12's decision to stand pat? Three options for you. Yes, I agree with the decision because the Pac-12 is in good shape, as is. Yes, I agree with the decision, but because the options for expansion were underwhelming, not attractive.
Okay. I vote for that.
Okay. And the final option is no, I do not agree with the Pac-12's decision. They should have struck first.
Look.
That wasn't a great option.
We talked about this pre-show. Would it have been fun to talk about two new teams joining the Pac-12 on a very, you know, ooh, look, something new and bright and shiny to talk about? Yeah, that would have been fun to talk about. There weren't any great options.
They just
out
weren't.
There just weren't.
I mean, Houston was the best option. It's okay.
It's okay.
The Pac-12 will live without Houston.
Yeah, the Pac-12 will live without Houston. And sorry, nothing against BYU, nothing against San Diego State, nothing against Fresno, nothing, any of those. It's just none of those would have. Yeah, there would have been something fun about something new to talk about. Ooh, the Pac-12 just got it's new. Look at these two new teams. There were no good options. Option B, that's the one I'm voting for too.
Okay, me too. But shockingly, 42% of our voters say they disagree with the Pac-12's decision. And they wish that they would have struck first.
I had a
feeling
it was going to go that way.
Because people like the newness of something.
Yes.
I mean, you get tired of the same.
Right.
Like, we're playing Cal. We're playing Oregon State. We're playing Washington. We're playing Houston.
That's
playing Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
It's new. You would get excited about that.
He's absolutely right. And that's the one thing about it that makes me a little disappointed is because it would have been something new and different.
How excited do you get when ASU's playing Cal?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's why people have voted that
Washington
way.
Washington State, Oregon State. You still get excited about some of those games.
So 45%?
42%.
42%, okay.
Then 32% are with you guys saying the options were underwhelming, totally fine. And then 26% say doesn't matter who was or was not available, the Pac-12 is in good shape as is.
Fairly even across board for the most part. Yeah, I had a feeling, because I retweeted the Pac-12 statement earlier today, and just the initial reaction I got to it on social media, I had a feeling there were going to be more people who were disappointed about it than not. Just the reaction I got to it. You're like, oh, man, they missed the boat. Oh, they should have done this. They should have done that. So, all right, you still have a chance to. The poll question is only an hour old. Plenty of chance for you to vote on it. At Burns and Gambo, one word is where you can find it on Twitter. Sarah runs our Twitter account, and she is there waiting for you to follow us on Twitter. She's standing by.
Waiting for your tweet.
Waiting for your tweet at Burns and Gambo. It's Sarah Cazell, and she is waiting for you. It sounds like a very creepy way of phrasing
it. Sure does.
Zaven Gollins also met with the media today, the Cardinals rookie middle linebacker, and obviously a potentially awkward situation. He gets drafted. He gets anointed the starter before he's even put on a uniform, been told it's his job. And Jordan Hicks, despite the intentions of maybe possibly moving him during this offseason, they didn't, How has the relationship been between the two? Here's Zaven Collins on that today.
Jordan, he's awesome. He's a great dude. He's a great man. He gives great advice every day, you know, things that we should look for, shouldn't look for, things that are important, not important, because he's been there and he's done that. He's actually been a great leader and role model for the team. He's absolutely been, you know, super helpful. And we have a good relationship. We try and work with each other every day. And there are certain packages where we're next to each other on the field all the time. So we're constantly working together.
It sounds great. I mean, this kid sounds very mature. He's a big physical player with unbelievable strength and speed. And the whole thing really wasn't about that. We know he's got the physical attributes to play this position. The question was, can he handle it? Can he handle the play calling? Can he understand what he's seeing? Can he get the play calls out in time? You know, we heard Buda Baker talking about him, giving him direction on how to turn this way so that way we both could hear it, like all both sides could hear it. So they really, really worked with him, and it seems to be going very well right now.
Yeah, it does. I'll play a soundbite or two on how it's going for him, but sticking on the topic of him and Jordan Hicks. Did you and Jordan Hicks have a talk and kind of clear up the air with each other?
I mean, yeah, we talked and stuff, and everything's fine. And we were literally like nothing, you know, happened. We don't even think about that. We just think about, hey, what's this? What do we got to do here? And, you know, it's not like one of us is trying to one-up each other ever, because that's not the situation. It's we all as a team have a common goal, and that's to win. And we do that on the football field during practice. We do that in the meeting rooms. We do that on the field during
And he even admitted, Zaven Collins did, I kind of wondered a little bit how Jordan Hicks was going to react to me, given that I was handed his job the day I got drafted.
I mean, I wondered a little bit, but then once I talked to our coach, they were like, you know, everything's fine. You know, that stuff is out of our hands. But everything's fine now. Everything's perfect.
Look, it was always, in my opinion, it was always optimal to keep Jordan Hicks. It was always the best decision to keep Jordan Hicks, as long as Jordan Hicks was going to be cool about it.
I think you had a line drawn in the sand. You weren't going to take a fourth, a fifth, a sixth. You were okay. If I remember correctly, I think you were considering the third, right?
You're right. I mean, I'm not a big believer in absolutes, so you're right. If someone was going to come and offer you a third-round pick for Jordan Hicks, well, okay. You know, I think I used the phrase spare part, which is a little disrespectful, but it's also kind of he's not expected to be a main guy. If you can get a third-rounder for a player who's not expected to play a whole lot for you, I don't know how you could turn your back on that. But I always thought that given the youth and inexperience of Zaven Collins, that you would be better off, unless you just got overwhelmed, you'd be better off keeping Jordan Hicks around. And I remember Jordan Hicks, I think he's had one press conference since the start of training camp, and just hearing him talk that day, I knew he was going to be fine with this. He was at least not fine. He was going to be professional about this.
He has been extremely professional.
It probably sucks what he's going through right now, but he's been a real pro about it.
But not if he's going to play. If these packages, and we don't know the percentage, but if these packages have him in there quite a bit, you know, and then maybe he'll be fine.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe he'll
be fine. You might be right. You might be right.
I mean, listen, he may not need to play 80% of the snaps. He might be okay at his age and with everything. Listen, if I could get in on, you know, 40 to 50% of the snaps, I'll be happy. Maybe he is. I mean, that's still a high number. We'll have to see.
Yeah. You mentioned Zaven Collins getting adjusted to his role. He says he's very comfortable with it.
I would say pretty comfortable, you know. At first, it's kind of like, you know, trying to figure out, you know, certain guys and figure out, like, who's supposed to be where. It's really like it's a big, huge working puzzle, but, you know, whenever you start seeing the same things over and over again with one piece missing, you realize, like, hey, this is out of place. You know, this dude, you need to bump down, or, hey, you need to bump out, or, you know, maybe drop someone. So you start to pick up on, like I said, those fine-tuning things. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah, says he's learned a lot, too, over the last couple of months.
A lot. I'd say probably fivefold of what I knew in minicamp, yeah, because of just the small things. Certain techniques. It's more of like technique work now rather than like mental error work and stuff like that. So it's we're kind of moving on to that stage, which we have to. It's been good so far. And then, you know, this last couple of days, JJ's been back, so we got to work with him, and some other guys have been back, so it's really nice.
I'd love to see him in contention for Defensive Rookie of the Year. And that's, who was it that had it the other day and had him as?
Daniel Jeremiah from NFL.com.
That's right. And we said probably because he's going to play a lot. He's going to play from day one. It's the starter. We've known that for a long time now. And we're not, all through camp. Camp's been over a month now, over a month of camp. We haven't heard negatives on Zaven Collins. We haven't seen a lot of negatives.
We haven't seen a lot of negatives. And that's these preseason games, we kind of mock them and ridicule them to a certain extent because there's not a lot to get out of them. I will say watching the games, that's the one thing maybe more than anything else I've been watching for is Zaven Collins to see, is he out of place? Is he making mistakes?
You're watching
is he
for the
getting
mistake.
Burned?
Yeah.
Right. And
I haven't seen it.
It's been two preseason games, not a lot of snaps, but haven't seen it so far.
I don't mean to be
Kansas
a Debbie
City.
Downer on this, but also we're seeing very vanilla
offenses. Sure, of course. Absolutely.
I mean, come week one against Tennessee, things are going to get dialed up a little bit.
No, and that's not being a Debbie Downer. That's being a realist about the situation. It's just this is all we have to judge him on so far, and so far he's passed the test, right?
Can't judge him on anything else. Now, obviously, the first week against Tennessee, I mean, when we come in that Monday after that first game, I mean, one of the major topics is going to be how those two young linebackers played against a team that's got a very dominant running game. That's what we're going to talk about. A team that's going through a lot of COVID issues right now. It's what, I got seven players
including
that are out?
Quarterback Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah. Seven players out right now with COVID for the Titans. You wish. Too bad the game's not this Sunday, right? Because they got plenty of time to recover.
Uh-huh.
But that'll be one of the major topic lines is how those two linebackers play against Tennessee.
Yeah. When we come back, NFL rosters going to get cut down across the league over the next week. Is there anybody that could be cut that the Cardinals could find a place for in terms of an addition? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadero, Dave Burns here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. On our show sheet, which is always just a rough draft, and it's never something we're married to.
Married?
Married.
Married?
At 2:45, we were scheduled to discuss guys who could get traded or cut by the Arizona Cardinals. And on my show sheet, I've got Andy Isabella's name written here.
Yes.
So this is where we veer off of the show sheet.
There was a great story today I was reading. Chicago Bears. There was a story in one of the Chicago places
the websites.
The websites.
Yeah, it wasn't a newspaper, but it was a website.
And they talked about Pounce. If the Arizona Cardinals cut Andy Isabella. And it says, according to Greg Rosendahl of NFL.com and others, there's a growing possibility that the team could soon part ways with former second-round draft pick Andy Isabella. After two forgettable seasons since being selected, training camp hit a snag when he landed on a reserve COVID list. Now his job's in jeopardy. And it says that the Bears should pounce. He was a second-round pick. He hasn't been targeted that much. He's had 30 catches on 48 targets. For 413 yards and three touchdowns. I said, that's actually pretty good. He just doesn't get the targets. And I will say that, that the Greg Rosenthal, that part of it is not going to happen. Andy Isabella is not going to get cut by the Arizona Cardinals. It doesn't matter what he does in his preseason game on Saturday. At this point, based on his practices this past week, he had a very good practice this week. He's had four practices since coming back from the COVID list. His spot on the roster is secure.
Well, to be fair to Greg Rosenthal, it's not like he's the only one who was speculating on the future of Andy Isabella.
Just, in that column,
we were speculating on the future of Andy Isabella 2 days ago, 3 days ago, wondering was he in any kind of danger. And the conclusion we had reached was that probably the only danger he was in was if they decided to keep five wide receivers instead of six, then he might be in trouble. Or if there was some wide receiver on the roster who was playing so well that he just kind of jumped over Andy Isabella. Those are the only two things we could see costing Andy Isabella a job. Although I do wonder now, with your news that kind of changed the tone of this segment a little bit.
Okay.
And your news is that Andy Isabella is going to make this roster. He's had a good week of practice. And I don't expect you to know the answer to this. I'm just asking this more as a speculation than anything else.
I'll try.
One of the things we had talked about was even if Andy Isabella does make the roster on Tuesday, the thing that Andy Isabella has to fear is if somebody else gets cut from somebody else's roster.
I think that'd be unlikely.
A wide receiver they like more. Wide receiver that they look at and go, ooh, we like Andy Isabella, but that guy who just got cut, we weren't expecting that to happen.
That's a good question.
Get that guy. I wonder, based off of your change of news today, at least the new news that you're reporting today, I wonder how firm their commitment is to him once the final cuts come down of Tuesday of next week, if there's something they like better that's
yeah,
out there.
I would say that's unlikely. We'll have to see, because I don't know who's going to get cut. They don't know who's going to get cut. Like, we don't know. So to say definitely, defiantly, no, there's no way. I don't know who's going to get cut. So let's take that with a grain of salt, and let's wait and see on that, because I think it's unfair to comment on that, because I just don't know who the players are going to be cut. I don't think that his job is in jeopardy on this roster right now. I expect he makes the team. I don't think it matters what happens in the preseason game on Saturday. You also got to remember that they've got two guys that are in the final year of their contracts at wide receiver. Christian Kirk and A.J. Green are in the final year of their contracts. So having that, you know, having a guy that's still under contract, I think you just, you know, you hold on to that. And you hold on to Andy Isabella. And if he gets some opportunities to play, great. I don't know if he's a big part of the future or not, but I do believe that he has made this team.
Cliff was asked about Isabella today and said basically what you're just saying a second ago, that he's looked good the last few days.
He did some good things. Last couple of days, you can tell he's dialed in, and he's really got a chip on his shoulder after missing 15 days. He's a guy who works really hard at his craft, and you can tell he was mad he had to miss those days and just come back and execute at a high level.
You also mentioned, when we were talking about this a couple of segments ago, that you expect Josh Jones is going to win the right guard position.
I do. He has been he's one of their best five offensive linemen. He has had a really strong camp from start to finish. I know there's a lot of competition at that position. I feel pretty safe now saying that I think that he's going to be the opening day starter at right guard. The other guys have been out. They've missed some time. He's taken advantage of it. He's just taken advantage of that time. So at this point, I do believe that Josh Jones will end up starting at right guard for the Cardinals.
Third-round pick out of Houston last year. Didn't play a ton last year. DJ Humphries a week ago on what he's seen from Josh Jones.
No fear whatsoever. He's been in between Beach and Rodney, and they've been on his head for the last X amount of weeks, you know, hitting him with the young guy stuff, just trying to get him dialed in and get him rolling like he should be. And he's handled it all in stride. You know, he's taking everything with great energy and not reluctant with anything. He's one of those guys that it's exciting to see because he's not afraid to pull the trigger. You know what I mean? He goes out there, he's just playing football. He's not afraid of making a mistake. He's not out there playing timid, you know what I mean? So that's always fun to watch when you got a young player that's learning something new in there. They got zero fear to him. So that showed me a lot of promise from Josh.
Yeah, credit to Josh Jones. He's a guy who's had a lot thrown at him this preseason.
Yeah.
In this Chiefs game this last week, the starting offensive line, he was playing right guard. The second unit offensive line, he was playing right tackle. I know it sounds like it shouldn't be that difficult, but that's a challenge, right? Because it's
yes.
different calls, different moves, different everything, different responsibilities about the position. And the fact that he's handling that speaks well about him. I know this. When the Cardinals drafted him in the third round last year, there were many people around the league who thought they got themselves a steal. Didn't manifest itself in season number one because there wasn't a ton of opportunity for him to play. For him to be the starting right guard in year two and to win that job would speak very highly of him in year two with the
He was listed as the 14th best player in the draft by Pro Football Focus. The 14th best player in the entire draft. He started all 45 games he played at Houston at left tackle. 45, he started all 45. And in his final 3 years, he only allowed 18 pressures while playing almost 1,300 snaps. Pass blocking snaps. 1,300 pass blocking snaps. 18 pressures. The kid's a beast. I think he is. I think he has won the right tackle spot.
Right
I know
guard.
This the right guard spot. Excuse me, the right guard spot. And I know there's still time left for Winters and Murray to maybe beat him out. But I think at this point, I think that Josh Jones has earned that spot as one of the five best offensive linemen on the team.
You mentioned that Greg Rosenthal story. I do want to mention this only because this particular player has been linked to the Cardinals time and time and time again.
Okay.
NFL.com, notable players who could be traded or cut. Zach Ertz is listed among the potential trade candidates. Cliff Kingsbury today was asked about tight end Ross Travis and whether he's done enough to make the team.
We'll see. You know, that's an interesting group. Bringing in Demetrius, I thought was a big boost. Darrell, we know what he can do. Max has played at a high level, and I think Ross has made plays when he's had an opportunity. So Saturday will be another big opportunity for him to show what he can do.
Yeah, the speculation in the story is that the Eagles probably can't get more than a late-round pick for Zach Ertz. He's been a player who's been linked with the Cardinals for
sure has, right?
All offseason long.
And his wife is the soccer player, right?
Yes, his wife is Julia.
Isn't she from here?
I believe she is. Yeah, that's thumbs up from Jordan. She's from here.
She's from here.
Yeah, she's from here. I think that's part of the reason why there's been a link.
Some ties, right?
Yeah. There's been, and you look at the position for the Cardinals. Okay, I like Max Williams. There's been a question about durability for him, you know, whether he can stay on the field because he missed a bunch of games a year ago.
Yes.
The piece goes on to speculate that because there's only three preseason games, there's more time now to work out trades if you want to instead of just flat out cutting a guy, so that maybe you'll see more trades. I don't know. Just something to keep an eye on.
I like the thought. I've got to do a little bit more homework on it. He's only 30 years old. I mean, he was a second-round pick in 2013 out of Stanford. He's had a very good career. I mean, he has. I mean, he had a 1,000-yard season just in 2018. He had 1,000 yards. He's a good red zone target in the end zone. So I think that it's definitely a good name to consider. I'll see what I could dig up on that, because it is a position you look at and you just wonder, could they be a little bit better at tight end?
That's it.
Could they be a little bit better?
Yep. Could they be just a little bit better than they are? Text us your thoughts on the Cardinals roster and Andy Isabella. The FanDuel text line is open to you at 620-620 right now. For years, speaking of guys like Zach Ertz, many NFL veterans have come to Arizona in the twilight of their careers to varying degrees of success. Where are J.J. Watt and A.J. Green going to fall on that scale? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.